Hey everybody, this is Mona Lisa from Futurepreneurs Black Entrepreneur Startup Program funded by RBC. You're listening to the Startup and Prosper podcast, the show that helps budding entrepreneurs on their quest to have a successful business. We wanted to create an inclusive outlet where people from everywhere can ultimately feel heard and understood while providing a special spotlight on the plight and current state of Black entrepreneurship. For the next short hour, let us be a source of inspiration and empowerment on your journey to reaching your greatest potential. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Startup and Prosper podcast by Futurepreneur. My name is Mona Lisa, and I am your host for today. Today, we're talking about how you can own your talent in a world where you feel like you don't belong with Alfred Burgesson, a social entrepreneur who supported the African-Canadian Senate Group and the office of Senator Colin Deakin as project lead, gathering data and insights on the current state of Black entrepreneurship in Canada. He was also co-chair of Canada's first ever State of the Youth Report and an alumni of the Prime Minister's Youth Council. Alfred was born in Ghana, moved to Canada and Nova Scotia with his family at an early age. We'll go over some interesting and relevant statistics that have come out in recent studies with regards to the state of BIPOC individuals in Canada, from the glass ceiling paradigm, self-worth, diversity, equity, and inclusion. We're going to try to cover it all. Thank you for joining us, Alfred.
Thank you for having me, Mona Lisa. It's been a couple months, but it's great to reconnect in the new year. I had a chance to get to the motherland of Africa, and I'm back in Canada, refreshed.
Nice. That's good. So you were able to get a little bit of warmth and of sun.
I was. My skin tone got a little darker over the winter break.
Very good. Very good. I'm excited to get to the sun soon, I hope, as well. So we like to start our podcast with an elevator pitch. Now, I already gave parts of your bio, but for your elevator pitch, I want you to tell us more about Tribe Networks. Now, you are also the founder and CEO of Tribe Networks. What is Tribe Networks?
Great question. So through my work with the Senate, as you mentioned, realized that there were gaps in the entrepreneurship and innovation ecosystem. And the gaps had to do with entrepreneurs not being, BIPOC entrepreneurs not being connected with each other across the country, and then BIPOC entrepreneurs not being connected to accelerators, incubators, and the sort of mainstream ecosystem. And so Tribe Network really came out of, you know, my personal experience and listening to the experience of other entrepreneurs. And we are aiming to be the BIPOC entrepreneurship and innovation hub in Canada. And so we want to support entrepreneurs, professionals, students, folks who are pursuing entrepreneurship and innovation. We want to support them connect with each other, connect with service providers and incubators and accelerators. And we also want to design programs that will, you know, support them on their journey, whether it's through mentorship or capital. We want to create the environment where they can thrive in the entrepreneurship and innovation ecosystem in Canada.
Amazing. Amazing. So we're going to get into more details. I have so many questions about Tribe Network and where you're at now and where you're going. But before we get into that, you know, these past years, we were finally able to gather data, right, about Black entrepreneurship, Black women entrepreneurs. We finally have statistics and we're able to put numbers on things that we've known for quite some time, but didn't have the data to prove, right? So why do you think research and statistics are essential, right, as a first step in examining the state of BIPOC communities within Canada?
Well, I think, like you mentioned, this is something that has been top of mind for people like you and I for as long as we've been in the ecosystem. And, you know, people before us have been talking about the changes that need to happen. You know, fortunately or unfortunately, I think we are operating in a society, in a system that often requires data to inform decisions. And when you have data, it's no longer, you know, he said or she said. It's like, here, like, this is it. This is what we heard. You know, this is just reliable data. And so I think, you know, in the world we live in today, decisions are driven by data. And so, you know, creating the survey and creating the opportunity for Black entrepreneurs to share their experience really did give us an opportunity to have them bring their voices to sort of these institutions or these governments that are making decisions off of data. So, you know, I do want to acknowledge that, like, this is not new. The information is not new. The data in the last few years has presented new opportunities where people are now actually believing and seeing that, oh, there are gaps and that they need to play a role in filling in these gaps and helping build some bridges.
And in your work, right, with the current state of Black entrepreneurship in Canada, did anything surprise you, right? We're saying that we were aware of a lot of things before these stats, but did anything surprise you at all?
Honestly, no. As sad as it is, not a lot of things from the data surprised me. I think, you know, some of the pieces in data was that, you know, Black entrepreneurs do not trust banks. So 19% out of the respondents in the survey that we did, 19% of Black entrepreneurs said they trust banks. 20% said they trusted their local chamber of commerce. And so, you know, these are things that we know, and to answer your question, it was not a surprise. It was sad to see the numbers be so low, but it was not a surprise.
And that, you know, another thing that came out of that study is the lack of access to funding, yes, but access to resources and networks and you know, all of these elements that are key when you're launching a business. What do you think are ways to bridge that gap and create, you know, that access?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're on many fronts, right? Like, as if I'm talking to the mainstream entrepreneurship and innovation ecosystem, and, you know, some of these accelerators, incubators that you'll find across the country, they need to be better representative of Canada. If they want to have more Black entrepreneurs, they need to have Black staff, they need to have Black coaches, Black mentors, you know, language and resources that are tailored towards Black entrepreneurs. So I think the ecosystem needs to do a better job of, you know, being representative of the community, number one, but also perhaps creating programs that are for Black entrepreneurs, because I think, you know, sometimes it's challenging for Black entrepreneurs to walk into white spaces, or, you know, white programs, create programs developed by non-Black entrepreneurs and to actually thrive in them. So I think the existing ecosystem definitely needs to invest more in how its team, senior leadership, the program staff and mentors reflects the Black community. On the entrepreneur side, as a Black entrepreneur, you know, I think you can't be there. There's this weird balance of walking into spaces where you know you're going to be the only one, right? And, you know, this is something that I battled a little bit with the being on the PM's Youth Council and entering some of the rooms that I did, where, you know, you might be the only person of color, the only Black person in the room. But at the same time, you realize that there are people in the community who are looking up to you and are watching you and are being inspired by you because you had the courage to walk into a space that is so white or a space that is not so diverse, right? So, to some degree, I think Black entrepreneurs, you know, entrepreneurship in itself, it's a very, it's not an easy thing, and you need to have a lot of courage to succeed in entrepreneurship. And so I think a part of that mindset is like being able to walk in spaces where, you know, they're not going to take you seriously, but you have to pitch. You got to make your pitch. and you got to sell your idea. You got to sell yourself as a competent entrepreneur, as an entrepreneur that has an idea, or, you know, is solving a problem that is worth investing in. And so I think my advice to entrepreneurs who are, you know, in the ecosystem and saying, you know, how do I get in these spaces? Like, just walk in, introduce yourself, tell them the problem you're trying to solve. Let them know that, you know, if you're not seeing yourself reflected in their staff, let them know that, and let them know if they want you to be in their space, or if you would like to be in their space, that you would prefer it to be a little bit more diverse, is what I would say.
You know, I like what you said about being vocal about the fact that they don't see themselves represented, because a lot of times we hear advice about, yes, be aware of how people might perceive you, but don't let that limit you and push through. But we don't hear as often, it's like you can speak up and mm-hmm. and encourage them to take knowledge of their biases, or take knowledge of the fact that they're not representative at all. So I think that's also a key element that people tend to forget and don't feel like it's their place to do.
Yeah, I think you have, you know, as a Black entrepreneur, as a minority, if you're walking into these spaces, I think you have, you know, it's a part of your responsibility to say something, because if you say something, it's going to make it easier for the next person coming to push against the barrier, right? And so I think for all of us, we need to stay vocal. We need to be vocal right to the people who may be oppressing us or maybe creating these barriers, and you need to let them know that they need to do better. I think it's very important that we remain vocal about these issues and these barriers.
Yeah. Well, the episode today is called Taking Up Space, You Belong. So taking up space requires speaking up and you know, being part of that solution for sure. So you were also very vocal about actions that the federal government and other entities should take in leading by example, right, regarding anti-racism. How do you think other major organizations or any entity, right, can make it a priority to diversify their hires? Like, once you make that a priority, what does that look like?
Great question. So I think if an organization is going to make a commitment to being more diverse, I think it's important that the current team, takes a step back to recognize either the knowledge they have or the lack of knowledge they have related to the people they want to hire, the group of people they want to hire or make an effort to diversify their workforce. So I think, and I would also say, before you make the hire, it's important to build capacity in the existing team to be able to support this new person or these new people who are coming into your workplace. And it's not, when I say build capacity, I think, you know, it's not something that happens before they come in and then it's over. It needs to be an ongoing journey. Like you need to recognize from the beginning, okay, here's what we do know about said community or said, you know, program that needs to be developed for community. Here's what we don't know. And you need to acknowledge that, and you need to then create the journey that will allow the entire staff to get better educated on how to support not only the community, but the staff person that's coming in. Because if you just bring someone in and then you sort of give them a project and you say, go lead it, you're setting them up for failure. So it's very important that you're not just bringing someone in to then do that one thing, or to fill that one gap. I think it's very important that the team as a whole actually, you know, builds capacity and knowledge in the problem that's trying to be solved.
Yep. I couldn't agree more. That's key points and all very, very important. For the next part, we're going to get into a little bit more of you, your own journey, Tribe Network, and everything else before and everything other, because I know that you have multiple projects that you're also working on. And so how it feels like, we talked about taking up space. And it seems like most of your professional actions, social endeavors, whatever it is, for you has always been about taking up space in any, you know, in any kind of way. Why has it always been important for you to do so? And have you always been that, I want to say, confident and that aware of that's the way you want to go? And yeah.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, I said this, someone asked me a similar question around my journey and like, what motivates me? You know what I mean? The question is kind of the root is like, what is motivating you to do what you're doing? And, you know, I think growing up, so for folks who don't know, I was born in Ghana and I moved to Canada when I was 6 years old. And I moved to a town called Port Hawkesbury in Nova Scotia, population of 4,000 people. and not very diverse, let's just say that. Beautiful place, good people, but not a diverse place. And so I feel like from a young age, I was always looking for a sense of like community and like, who are my people here? You know what I mean? It was like, who can I relate to? Who's my people? And what can we do together? And I feel like, you know, in the entrepreneurship, my entrepreneurship journey began in high school. And that's when that sort of attitude then became more, I guess, actionable when it came to how I operated in circles, whether it's community development projects or working with my businesses. And, you know, in high school, I joined this after school program called Junior Achievement. And Junior Achievement has a company program where you come together with your peers, your students, and you build a company over the course of a school year after school. And then at the end of the year, you share your results. Here's how many sales we had. Here's how we did marketing. And so, you know, that introduction to entrepreneurship in high school really, for me, just like this feeling of having a core group of people I was working with, and together we were taking up space. We were together, we would think about how we would take up space, whether it was at the market or when we got on the stage. So I feel like, you know, entrepreneurship, as lonely as it can be, I feel like you can find, you know, like-minded people who care about the problem you're trying to solve, and together you can take up space. And so, you know, for me, definitely looking for, in search of my community, has been a theme throughout my life, I would say. And then together with my community, saying, okay, how can we either create our own space or go out there and do what we love within the space that is out there.
So in wanting to find your community, when you moved here from Ghana with your family, did you have any family members already in Canada or not at all?
We had some in Toronto, but we were in Nova Scotia, right? So we had some family in I believe Scarborough, but we were far away.
And did you get the chance to go often back in Ghana?
No. I've only been back to Ghana twice since we moved here. Wow. Back in 2003. So, and I just went home in December for a month, and that was my second time. That was only my second time going back. So, you know, it felt very, still very raw, still very new in terms of what I remember from when I was a child. So yeah, when we moved here, it was very much at a young age for me. And it was like, here's where you're gonna grow up. And so for me, it was like, okay, where do I fit, right? And how can I fit? And how can I, you know, again, create these spaces or enter spaces where I can share my talents, share my ideas, share my the problems I'm trying to solve.
And did you get any pushback? Is maybe not the right word, but did you come across any situations where certain people or institutions didn't understand why it was so important for you and you know, in your community to take up that space? Was there any Yeah.
Great question. Yeah, I mean, so my first business was a digital media company, which, you know, after high school and university, I launched this digital media company. And with my peers, it was, you know, our whole thing was we're going to be a youth-led digital agency. And it was all people under 30. And I, you know, at the time, cameras became this cool thing, you know. And so a lot of my friends had cameras and they were really talented, but they didn't have, they're all doing it for creative, fun reasons, but they wanted to channel it through commerce and they wanted to find ways to make money off of whether it was using the camera for photography or videography or creating graphics on Adobe. So we built this group of people, of creatives, and we, you know, we would knock on doors on shops in the city, and we would all come in and we would say, you know, I was leading the charge. I would say, are you on Instagram? Do you see this? This is Instagram. Or Facebook. Are you on here? Do you know you can sell your product to people over in Australia from Canada or in the UK by using Instagram? And then if they said no, we would show them what we've done for another client, or would, you know, people would have their cameras. So we would say we can take product pictures and we can put it on there for you. So we made it really easy. So I didn't run into many, at that time point, I think the way we operated was so smooth that it honestly, people would just loved it. We're like, yes, help us spread the word on our product or our business. But I'll say, you know, 2 years after that, when I remixed that company into a more, we began to do more like consulting, youth-led consulting initiatives. And there was one project we were working on in Halifax around housing. And we wanted to get youth involved in coming up with solutions for the housing crisis in Halifax. And there were a few meetings where, you know, you could tell you either were not being taken serious at all, dependent on the whether it was the lived experience people were sharing, or the ideas people were sharing. There were moments where, you know, you could tell these senior bureaucrats were not willing to listen to, 20-year-olds or 24-year-olds bring up solutions. So I've definitely had moments where, you know, you're so excited and passionate to share what you've done or the ideas you have, and it's been just shot down by people who just don't believe in you.
And how'd you overcome that?
So we overcame that by getting 500 citizens to send the city staff and politicians letters about the problems we were trying to solve.
Way to go. That's awesome. That's awesome.
Futurepreneurs Black Entrepreneur Starter Program is funded by RBC with additional loan financing from BDC. For more information, head over to futurepreneur.ca/BESP.
So at the beginning, you gave us your pitch for Tribe Network, but I want to bring you back again because I really want to go through every step of that journey and how you came about that idea. So how did it start? What was the element, the spark that started this whole business?
Yeah. So, I mean, Tribe, we're in 2022, February. Tribe, the idea for Tribe started to become more of a, the concept, I guess, started to form in a way in the summer of 2020. And so this was during Black Lives Matter movement and, you know, people really on this tick of like, how do we support Black entrepreneurs? Like how do we support Black people? Like it was very much a sensitive, tender time of like, people learning but wanting to take action. And my sister and I were just having a conversation about the needs when it comes to Black entrepreneurship. She's an entrepreneur herself. I'm an entrepreneur. And so we started to just have a conversation about the needs of Black entrepreneurs. And initially, the sort of the core of what how the conversation started was, how can we give Black entrepreneurs a platform where they can sell their products and services to the world? And how can we sort of create this community where they can connect with each other and learn from each other? And so it started in that sort of very simple way. She's a marketer and has digital media expertise. And so, you know, her brain was definitely thinking around, how do we help them market their products or services to the wider community, society, globally? And I was saying, but how do we get them to support each other during this tender time? Like, and how do we create a sense of belonging and community during COVID, during lockdown? And so my sister and I started the conversation. It started that way. And then I got a call from Senator Colin Deakin. And he says, you know, in the Senate, he and his staffers, he and his colleagues with the African Canadian Senate group, they want to dive deeper into the gaps for Black entrepreneurs in Canada. And he wanted me to support his team in the Senate on exploring what learnings they could gather to inform policies, programs that the government would launch. And so I ended up joining Senator Colin Deakin's team and working with the African Canadian Senate group. And, you know, as project lead, I'm connecting with Black entrepreneurship organizations from the East Coast to the West Coast. And I'm learning about how they're supporting Black entrepreneurs. I'm learning about what they believe the barriers for Black entrepreneurs are. And then at the same time, I'm talking directly with Black entrepreneurs who are also sharing information when it comes to the barriers they have or, you know, and how they would like to be in the ecosystem. And so, you know, Tribe really is an idea formed in summer 2020, but it didn't become a tangible thing until winter of 2021, I would say. And honestly, I owe Senator Colin Deakin and the African Canadian Senate group an enormous, you know, debt of gratitude, because this problem and idea my sister and I were exploring together initially, you know, it was so serendipitous that I had the opportunity to actually then study it for 6 months via a job with the Senate. And so I learned a lot during the time with the Senate, and obviously the data that we collected through that definitely shed light on the state of Black entrepreneurs, and it validated the idea. It validated the need for Black entrepreneurs to be connected with each other, the need for them to have a space where they could get access to opportunities, resources, the ecosystem, because currently they don't have that. And so that's a bit of the background, the sort of how it got started. I don't know if there are questions that are coming up for you after hearing that, but that's
a lot of questions. But awesome. So okay, but that's fun, you know. It's such of an interesting coincidence, like you said, that the idea came up, you were talking about it with your sister, and then Senator Colin Deakin calls you. Essentially, you're doing market study for Black entrepreneurs in Canada, but also for the business that you're about to launch that's addressing specifically that need. So I have two sets of... Yeah, go ahead.
I do want to say, when we started thinking about the idea for Tribe Network, it was not a business. Tribe was not being looked at as a business. It was, how do we create an entity that helps build capacity in entrepreneurs? And so the vehicle that my sister and I were thinking was a not-for-profit. It wasn't until later in 2021 where, you know, someone told me to sign up for a pitch competition to pitch the Tribe Network. And I was like, Tribe is, this is not a business. I'm not like, I am an entrepreneur, but I didn't think that Tribe Network as an entity is a business. And they said, I think, you know, they said, you should think about this, because what you don't want to do is develop an organization that is forever dependent on government funding. Right. And that's when I said, okay. And so I ended up putting my name in the pitch competition with no business registered. This would have been in April of 2021. So I put my name in the pitch competition. I pitched and I won $25,000.
Just like that. Love it.
Just like that.
Amazing.
And so since that competition, obviously the competition allowed me to get serious about, okay, what is a sustainable business model for this thing I'm trying to do? Because I don't want it to be dependent on government funding forever. And I would like it for it to be sustainable. And so that competition, which is called the Volta Cohort Pitch Competition, allowed me to think deeply about what does the sustainability model look like for Tribe Network. And after that was when we actually ended up incorporating a for-profit. And so the way our structure is that we have a not-for-profit entity that owns the for-profit platform completely. All right. So that's currently how we're structured, and it allows us, effectively we're a social enterprise, where we're able to, you know, get government funding, but we also have an enterprise business where we're able to get partners to pay for our platform.
Okay. See, that's a very, very good and smart strategy. But I wanna go a little bit deeper into the funding part, right? Because that's the key. Even if you, even with your initial thought of wanting it to be a nonprofit, it would rely on possibly grants or government funding. And then that spark about not wanting your business to solely your organization to solely rely on that. Then you made the switch into a corporation. The pitch competition, you won $25,000. But after that, $25,000 is a lot, but you need more, right? Especially for a tech platform, developers, all of that. So how, once you made that decision, right? You went into that route, won that amazing pitch competition. What still is your strategy regarding funding? You mentioned partners. So please tell us more about that. And then how else are you considering funding?
Great question. So we are bootstrapping. Outside of that $25,000, which actually, I won't say anything. let's just say it's taking a long time to receive the funding. That $25,000. So we've had to do a lot of bootstrap. We've had to bootstrap the business in the sense of, you know, savings that I have. I've had to, you know, tap into those and ensure that, you know, we can pay for the software we're using. We can pay for the developer's time. Had to do a lot of that in the early days. And you know, in the early days too, one of the things that we were incredibly lucky to have is organizations who believed in the idea. And even though the platform wasn't fully developed, it wasn't fully functioning, it wasn't, you know, this big splash Shopify or Spotify or whatever type business model, they said, we believe in what you're trying to do. And so we're actually going to sign up. We're going to sign up and we want to be the initial users of this platform. And I'm so happy to say the Futurepreneur is one of those organizations that believed in Tribe Network to say, we love what you're doing. We know this problem exists and we believe in you enough to, you know, buy in to help essentially solve this problem. And so we had a few organizations that came on board in the early days that, you know, gave us a bit of runway to actually keep building and keep developing. And so, you know, between April and August, we had a beta, we had a version one, and we tested it with a few programs and partners that came on board. And then in August, September, we created version two. And so, and now more partners are coming on board and, you know, people are starting to actually buy into the platform and buy and put their money into it. And so right now it is very tight in terms of how we're keeping the for-profit sustainable. But so far it's been, you know, it started off bootstrapping, and now it's the revenue that we do have is going right back into developing the platform itself.
Okay. Interesting. Well, I'm definitely excited to see what's next for Tribe Network. Cause as you said, we really do believe in it, and it's a great way to bring everybody together. Especially with the different tabs that you have on there. There's an opportunities sectors. It's great to centralize all the information and to also allow Black entrepreneurs, BIPOC entrepreneurs from all over Canada to be able to connect with each other. Which brings me to this question that I think is important for you, but also for anybody out there listening that's working on a platform of some sort that has two different set of clients, potential partners and organizations, and then individuals. How do you get all these BIPOC entrepreneurs to get on the platform? And to, because in my mind, it's also about building new habits. Everybody's used to, and it's not the same at all, but everybody's used to social media, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, all of that. They're all downloaded on everybody's phones or almost everybody. And they're used to the way they work. LinkedIn, same thing. But it's a habit that those companies were able to build. It takes time. So how are you approaching that side?
Oh, it sounds like you're in our meetings. You're... Because we've been talking about this for the past few months, and you know, I think in the very early days we were very much around, let's actually get something that is out there and that works and that people can sign up for. You know, in the past few months we've been talking a lot about what are the rituals we want to have in the community, and I think rituals is a thing that you know, like habits, rituals give people an opportunity to show up, and to participate. And so we are planning a set of rituals that will occur on a biweekly basis, monthly basis on the platform. One of them is Wellness Wednesdays. So every Wednesday we have a different trainer or yoga teacher, mindfulness practice teacher. Every Wednesday afternoon, we have a session where anyone can log on, as long as you're a member on the platform, anyone can log on and practice wellness. And so we are being very intentional about the types of habits we want to build, because the last thing we want to do is to create something that ends up being toxic or something that actually ends up hurting and not supporting the well-being of the community. And so it's a very important question you ask, and we are being very intentional about the rituals we create and centering well-being at the heart of it all. So that's, you know, folks are wondering what they would expect if they were to join the Tribe Network. Regular rituals, whether it's through well-being or training sessions on how to show up in a workspace that, you know, requires belonging or is dealing with diversity issues. So we're going to be hosting a various rituals that allow our members to sort of to build capacity, to upskill, and to also be able to connect with other people across the country.
I love that. Now I want to know a little bit more. So I've been following Tribe Network, and you've built quite an impressive board of advisors, right? And we say that, whether it's mentorship or advisors, those relationships are key in the life of an entrepreneur. It's extremely important. It helps you grow. It helps you see things differently and gives you access to just a whole other set of network. How do you pick your advisors? Mm-hmm. How do you go about that? And is there anything you'd like to share about what they brought you in terms of growth or just perspective?
Great question. And I think it's a very important theme when you talk about mentors, coaches, advisors. And I think every entrepreneur should strive to identify a coach or advisor or a mentor. And it's, you don't have to be as you know, forward or blunt to say, Mona Lisa, do you want to be my mentor? It doesn't have to be like that. It starts with a conversation. It starts with sharing the problem you're trying to solve and, you know, seeing how the person on the other end responds to that and seeing if they believe in the problem you're trying to solve. I think that's the number one thing. Do they believe in the problem you're trying to solve? And then do they believe in you? Because if you have those two things, that is an individual who will support you and, you know, when things are horrible and will also be there when things are great, right? And will give you the space, will completely, you know, having those two thing qualities in an advisor, a coach, or a mentor is crucial. Do they believe in you? Do they believe in the idea or the problem you're trying to solve? Because there's a level of trust that is built once, you know, those two things have been identified and are in place. So for anyone listening, I would definitely encourage you to identify people who can support your entrepreneurial journey. But the crucial thing is that they believe in a problem you're trying to solve and they believe in you, because ultimately, you know, it's if you're working with someone that doesn't believe in you, it's not going to be fun. And if you're working with someone that doesn't believe in the problem you're trying to solve, they probably don't know enough what the problem you're trying to solve. So there's probably not much they can offer, right? So make sure that you work with people who believe in you and people who believe in the problem you're trying to solve.
Wise words. Wise words. I feel like a lot of times entrepreneurs and just people in general are afraid or shy or feel like it's too much to approach certain people or build those relationships and have those conversations. But it's you bring it back to the same theme, right? Just go for it. Talk about your idea. Build those relationships and just don't be afraid. Because that's what's going to help you. And not everybody's going to be responsive, right? Not everybody's going to agree. It's not going to click with everybody. You just need to find the right fit and nurture those relationships as well. That's extremely important too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, that's well said. And I think, you know, I think sometimes when people approach the conversation around someone being an advisor or a mentor, like if you're approaching a conversation with someone with that in your mind, it can be a bit daunting, especially if the individual you're approaching has 10 plus years experience in a certain industry or has, you know, has built a set of skills over a career. And so it's so much easier if you simply approach it by, you know, stating the problem you're trying to solve, how you're going about solving it, and asking for feedback. And through that, you can know whether or not this is someone that believes in you and believes in the problem you're trying to solve. And you can sort of use that to gauge the level of trust that you can build with this person in a sort of more professional or personal relationship.
Hmm. And could you share, maybe you're not ready to share, but I'm still going to ask, what's next for Tribe Network? Is there something interesting coming in terms of your growth or any new exciting partnerships? Anything you'd like to share with us right now?
So, side note, when did this podcast come out?
Well, I think it'll come out probably in March.
End of March, okay.
All right, you don't.
No.
You can give a hint.
I'll give a hint. So, I mean, we have a lot of exciting things happening at Tribe, and like I mentioned, rituals on our platform is something that you'll see more of, and we'll be promoting those on social. We're going through a bit of a branding exercise right now, being specific on the identity that we want to have as a brand. We, you know, back to what you mentioned about mentorship and the importance of, you know, having advisors, coaches, we're actually looking for people who want to mentor Black, Indigenous, and people of color. So we've put out a call for people to sign up to apply to join Tribe Network as a mentor. And so we're going to put that in the show notes. That's going to be in the link somewhere. But we know that there are people who want to support BIPOC entrepreneurs. There are lots of people who have expertise in different fields, but perhaps they just haven't been able to actually know where to go to support underrepresented folks, right? So we want to gather as many of those folks who are interested as possible. And, you know, they're going to get access to world-class mentorship training and access to mentorship tools and resources as well when they become a tribe mentor. And so, you know, we're making an effort in mentorship, making an effort in the types of rituals we want to host on the platform. And I will also share that in spring of this year, we will be launching a Black entrepreneurship program on the East Coast. And so in Atlantic Canada, entrepreneurs will be able to join Tribe Network and get access to funding, get access to resources and some workshops and things of that nature that will allow them to start their business, but to also grow and scale their business as well.
Well, I'm glad I asked the question. This is all extremely exciting. And this just makes me realize that you and I need to talk offline and and see what other ways we can collaborate, because at Futurepreneur, we are always looking for mentors as well. But this is nice. This is great news. And I love to see your growth and everything that you're doing. It's amazing. And I'm rooting for you. And I'm hoping that you get to the point where you're trying to get. And I encourage all the entrepreneurs listening to us today to check out Tribe Network, create your account, look at what's on there. There are so many interesting resources. And like Alfred just said, so many more to come. So stay tuned. I loved so many of the things that you shared with us today, Alfred. You know, the episode is called Taking Up Space You Belong. You are the embodiment of taking up space and making sure you belong in all of your surroundings and the communities that you work with belong as well. So I encourage everybody listening to us, you know, don't be afraid, push through. And don't be afraid and push through. These are the main things that I want everybody to remember. Before we close off, can you share, Alfred, with all the entrepreneurs that are listening to us, all the BIPOC entrepreneurs that are listening to us, why should they join Tribe Network? You have 30 seconds.
Wow. Well, you should join Tribe Network because we are partnering with incredible organizations who are supporting entrepreneurs across the country, like Futurepreneur and like accelerators and incubators in Canada who have access to funding, access to mentors, access to resources that will support you on your journey. And you should especially join Tribe Network because it's a space where you can connect with other entrepreneurs, other BIPOC entrepreneurs. And I think that is so important, is that we create the spaces where entrepreneurs can support each other. When I'm dealing with an issue, when I talk to an entrepreneur who's already dealt with that issue, they're able to give me direct sort of lived experience feedback on how I can solve that issue. And so I think it's really important that entrepreneurs surround themselves in a community where they belong, and to also have that support group, because it's not going to be easy. And to have people you can lean on and learn from is a really important part of the journey that I think we don't talk about enough. Is that it is truly difficult, and having a support network to get you through those tough times is important.
That was perfect. So please hang on to, what is it called? It's www.tribenetwork.ca or .com?
That's correct. .ca.
.ca. Perfect. So I don't know what else you need to hear to go on the website and register. Alfred, you did a great job. Thank you so much for joining us today. I feel like I could have gone on and on with so many other questions. Thank you for sharing all your wise words. To our listeners, make sure you subscribe to this podcast. You can comment and share all of your reviews with us. Thank you.
Thank you, Mona Lisa. Thank you to the whole Futurepreneur team, the production team that's putting this on, and to the audience tuning into this. I hope that I brought you some value today. I hope you learned something new, and I hope what I had to share today supports your journey as an entrepreneur.
You have just listened to Futurepreneur's Startup and Prosper podcast with your host, Mona Lisa. Make sure to subscribe to this podcast on all streaming platforms. And for more information on Futurepreneur's Black Entrepreneur Startup Program funded by RBC, make sure to head over to futurepreneur.ca/BESP.